Anesthesia Deconstructed is supported by National University's CRNA program. National University's CRNA program is one of the nation's top programs for CRNAs and dedicated to making you a successful CRNA. The program doesn't just prepare you for entry-level practice. National focuses on making you a full-service provider and gives you insight into what is actually happening in the industry. With connections to faculty with backgrounds in advanced clinical practice, academics, research, and anesthesia services management. Learn more at nu.edu.
Welcome to Anesthesia Deconstructed, science, politics, realities. Listen in as medical professionals join industry experts, Dr. Mike McKinnon and Dr. Joseph Rodriguez, to discuss the latest science and medical advancements, the effects of our political climate, and the reality of today's changing healthcare environment. Let's get started with your hosts, Dr. Mike McKinnon and Dr. Joseph Rodriguez.
Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of Anesthesia Deconstructed. We have two very special guests, two of the most senior leaders from one of the largest, and I think it's fair to say, most influential anesthesia groups in the country, North Star Anesthesia. We have Randy Moore, who is a retired major in the United States Army, former director of perioperative anesthesia services at, how do you say it, Randy? Passavant Area Hospital?
Passavant.
Perhaps in CRNA circles, most known for his time as the chief executive officer of the American Association of Nurse Anesthesiology, and now the chief CRNA of North Star Anesthesia. And then his physician counterpart, Dr. James Roberts, who has been, from what I can tell, Jim, you've been in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, well, at least since 2009 or so. When did you start? How long have you been in Dallas?
Thanks for having us today first, Joe. We appreciate the opportunity to sit with you and your audience.
Absolutely.
And to share a little bit about North Star Anesthesia. I actually have been in Dallas-Fort Worth since 2009. I started with North Star in 2008 out in Lubbock, Texas, and had the opportunity to move into a leadership role here in the Dallas-Fort Worth region in 2009, in a relatively medium-sized hospital, which allowed me to be a little bit closer to the then relatively new startup headquarters and some of the folks that were more influential on creating, our vision around North Star and, building the North Star team and in Texas mostly. And we pretty much expanded from there, although North Star's history does go back to 2004. Here in the Dallas-Fort Worth region. And, that history starts, if you will, with, funny enough, a physician anesthesiologist and a CRNA here in Dallas-Fort Worth that had the vision that maybe anesthesia productivity and anesthesia in the space could be more of a partnership mindset with hospitals and surgeons. And how can physician anesthesiologists and CRNAs team up to provide a better partnership and a better service for patients and surgeons, originally in the Texas hospitals? And of course, as you know our story a little bit, we've expanded significantly from there.
Yeah, no, I've heard you guys are, North Star is not small. I think that's fair to say. And Jim, your current role, so you're in Dallas and your current role is the chief medical officer of the entire group, right? Which is about 3,000 clinicians. Does that sound about right?
True. Yeah, I'm very fortunate, very blessed. I'm the chief medical officer nationally, alongside Randy, who's the chief anesthetist officer nationally. And we essentially team up for those 3,000 clinicians and the leadership and management and development of those 3,000 clinicians that you mentioned. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. And I think North Star is unique in that it was started by both a physician and a CRNA. And just for clarity, it was not the two of you, correct?
True. That is true.
Okay. I'm just kidding. I knew it wasn't the two of you. But I don't know. You two seem both pretty ambitious and pretty effective. I've interacted with Adam Spiegel, the CEO. He seems like a pretty effective guy. He's a Philadelphia and Arizona guy like myself. But that's a little bit about the history, right? What about the present? Can you guys
describe the current landscape for Northstar. Where is your current reach? Where are you guys going next? Randy, why don't you go ahead and describe that?
Yeah, so we are as you mentioned, Joe, we're a big company, and we are on a fairly steep growth trajectory. So if you look at our footprint, which obviously originated out of Texas, and then as the company evolved, our footprint got larger, right? So now we are in fact check me, Jim, but I think about 23 states. We've got over 200 facilities. And the platform is, you know, we started out focusing almost exclusively on hospitals, and we have diversified. So hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers, and we could certainly talk about the trends relative to where surgical volume's going. And so, here we are, 3,000 clinicians, 200 sites in 23 states, and growing in a disciplined but fairly aggressive manner because of, you know, everything that is happening in the anesthesia business environment is calling out for companies that are really good, really partnership oriented, and really effective in practice in anesthesia practice management.
You know, both of you have mentioned this partnership idea, right? And I think it's fair to say, as someone who's been involved in speaking to hospital administrators, there is a lot of aggressive posturing from anesthesia groups. And it sounds like you guys take a different approach, right? Take a more collaborative approach. But, you know, Jim, when you say partnership with these hospitals, what does that mean from your perspective when you're in these meetings with these larger systems as the CMO and they say, we're having a big problem, right? And mm-hmm. you talk about partnership. What does that mean from your point of view?
You know, this is a very disruptive time in healthcare. For hospitals, for patients even, and also in the anesthesia space. We see our role really is focusing around value add to our hospitals, who formerly, sometimes we call them clients, but really in all honesty, I think we try to focus on the mental picture that we're partnering with our hospitals to help them overcome some of the challenges that they're facing in a very disruptive and challenging time for them. Inside their operating rooms, but also in the perioperative space as a whole. So we try not to focus strictly on operating rooms, but the preoperative management of patients, the postoperative management of patients, the pain management of our patients. In some areas, we do intensive care. But our overall philosophy, if you will, is a value add proposition to the hospital. How do we treat those hospital clients, if you will, as partners? And really in effectively as advisors and counselors mm-hmm. to help them solve the issues that they're facing today. And those commonly will be a financial issues. Sometimes it's operational issues and efficiency issues. Many times it's leadership within either the anesthesia space within the operating room or, leadership as a medical staff member or medical staff members. So we see this more of a holistic perspective and a holistic view. When you look at Randy's background experience and mine, and then if you look at our teams on the operational side of the house, as well as our senior clinical leaders, as well as Adam and Megan and our senior executive teams, we bring a breadth of experience and a depth of experience around OR management that many, many groups, I don't believe, have or carry with them. So, we have that to offer our hospitals in a financially and fiscally responsible fashion and manner so that they can see similar to what we see. And that's a long-term horizon and a long-term perspective around the anesthesia space over the course of the coming decades as we continue through this disruptive time. So it's really a mental shift from we don't see ourselves as a vendor. We see ourselves in a more active role as partner.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think what most small and medium-sized groups do well is, it's the relationship aspect, it's solving that local problem, right? But once you get to a certain level, it's a lot of the things of what you talked about, right? Having the data insights and and frankly, having made prior mistakes and then having the learning, or the buzzword is the institutional learning, to help those ORs work well. You mentioned, Jim, about the long-term horizon. And one issue that has arisen in a lot of conversations, and this is common, I lecture at National University, and those learners will recognize this. But in the service sector, right, any service can be either insourced or outsourced, right? Any one of us could start a plumbing business and then add on accounting and then add on construction or whatever else. They're all just parts of the service economy. And anytime cost rises, a hospital administrator is going to think, why wouldn't I just bring this in-house? Right? Because, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they do effectively. But I think, Jim, a lot of the things you mentioned are potential pitfalls as far as making things run well. Right? So when that conversation occurs, how is North Star differentiating itself in terms of, you know, insourcing versus outsourcing? Mm-hmm. Right? And I know we didn't plan on this question, but as you were talking about long-term horizon, it occurred to me. But either one of you, whomever, or both, whomever feels most comfortable.
So the it's honestly, this is going to sound weird coming from someone who is in a practice management company. Insourcing is not always the wrong answer. I think you have to be clear-eyed about what you're trying to accomplish. And just to define it for the audience, when we say insourcing, we're talking about hospitals and hospital systems making the decision to directly employ the CRNAs and anesthesiologists. Right. When we have conversations with folks about, hey, they're insourced and they want to talk to us about outsourcing, or maybe it's a current partner and they're like, hey, things are getting expensive, we're thinking about insourcing, we try to help them in a very consultative way understand the risks and the benefits of either one of those decisions. And the first thing to understand, and this is going to sound, you know, very definitive, but I think it's true, which is if you are planning to insource, to directly employ your CRNAs and anesthesiologists because you think you're going to save money, you are wrong. Full stop. Because there is all kinds of direct and indirect cost implications associated with that that require a significant level of practice management expertise that you're simply not going to have, or very few hospitals and health systems can have. So think about, I mean, even like the revenue cycle process, which is super weird and complicated for anesthesia.
Yes.
Think about the negotiation leverage that you would not have with commercials based on anesthesia reimbursement rates. Think about the recruiting engine that exists at a North Star versus what you would have at a hospital health system that is specific to anesthesia clinicians.
A geographic area.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, you, even a big health, you know, for his banner in my neck of the woods, it, you know, they're a Southwestern company essentially, right? Whereas North Star is a national company, sure.
Yeah. And then there's also the fact that, you know, our thesis is the single greatest predictor on whether or not a facility is going to be successful from an anesthesia contract perspective is the quality of clinical leadership that's on the ground there. And I mean, in an honest moment, hospitals and health systems aren't particularly effective in doing that either on the anesthesia side. So all of that is to say it's a question. If I was a hospital CEO, I would definitely ask that question, which would be, hey, what do we need to do to position us potentially for directly employing anesthesia clinicians? But there are things that, you know, you have to do that are not necessarily inculcated into the competencies of hospitals and health systems. Now, if you want to make the decision to directly employ anesthesia clinicians because you want to control anesthesia services and you're okay of paying the price, a significant price to do that, then that is the right answer. Go ahead and do that. And I think that's the reason why these questions are becoming more and more prevalent is because everything is getting more expensive in healthcare, including the price of anesthesia, which is largely inflected on, you know, the workforce, you know, it is being influenced by the workforce workforce shortage of anesthesia clinicians, which is driving up the cost of anesthesia clinicians. There's also reimbursement headwinds that we can talk about too. But those are the things that are resulting in a lot of what we call churn. So there's a lot of folks who are actually employing their anesthesiologists and CRNAs who don't want to do that anymore because it's too damn hard. And then there's a lot of folks who are, they have a contract with a quote unquote vendor and they are upset with the year over year price increases and they don't want to do that anymore either. And so there's a lot of that, these conversations that are happening in the anesthesia business space as we speak.
Yeah, that matches my experience. I was speaking with a CEO and COO. I'll share this with the audience briefly. I'm sharing how our group can help. Jim, just as you do, you know, in a very partnership, collaborative way, right? Being very transparent with all the challenges, but here's how we can solve it. And the COO, he's a young, ambitious type. And he says, hey, how would you feel if we just employed you and your group? Because Randy, to your point, he wanted to solve this problem, right? And I think there's also the, hey, we make a big change and I take, you know, that kind of goes under my umbrella. I take credit for that. And I simply said, we'll call him Michael. I simply said, Michael, if you want to do that, you will win on control. You will gain more control of your operating rooms, but you will lose on cost. And the CEO who was right behind him, you know, it was about 20 or 30 years older. She just nodded her head slowly. And because I think it's exactly right, because Northstar competes against, right, all, you know, primarily against the other larger AMCs, and you have to compete on cost and quality, mm-hmm. right? But if you're employed, well, you have zero, you know, interest in competing, right? Or zero interest in lowering your costs. You just want to presumably be paid, you know, the highest you can, right? As an individual and as a department. Anyway, thank you for indulging me. I want to move on to speaking of Northstar competitors, right? Because there's all sorts of companies in the space. I've learned you have your two or three main groups, your 20 or 30, or your 200 or 300. And really, I think Northstar is competing on a different level, taking on challenges that are, you know, much, you know, if you split Northstar five times, they'd still be all five groups are probably one of the largest groups in the country, right? So what separates Northstar from, say, USAP, NAPA, Sound, and you can take this question any way you like, but if I'm an individual clinician and I'm looking at one of these contracts, what's the Northstar difference, so to speak, that you guys can both speak to? Jim, do you want to speak to it first?
Sure. There's a number of differences. I think one of the primary differences really is going to be what I mentioned before, and that's that partnership mentality with the hospital's collaborative partnership philosophy. Another one really is how do we focus on our providers and our clinicians, you know, as well as our back office and corporate teammates, and how do we invest into them? And I think probably the third thing would be around what Randy mentioned earlier. We put significant resources and time. In fact, we have an entire department around leadership development. As Randy mentions earlier, that really is what we believe to be the largest impact that we can have on our local teams and our local hospitals. And then we regenerate, if you will, that energy at the regional level. But maybe most importantly, really, is our long-term perspective, as I mentioned earlier as well. And that really revolves around, our structure and our ownership structure, in that we're completely differentiated away from the private equity space. We do not have shareholders specifically that are looking for quarterly reports. We do not have an ownership structure that looks for a 3 to 5 year flip, if you will. A lot of time and energy is spent in private equity determining, even before an organization is taken under their wing or purchased, as much as 30% is devoted to determining how will this particular entity be sold off in 3 to 5 years. And so with those are somewhat limiting. Those are definitely limiting factors when you compare it to our philosophy of working with the hospital and hospital systems and teammates for the decades to come. And that really is our horizon. Cranemere affords us that opportunity. They have a holding company mentality in the Berkshire Hathaway model, so to speak, where it's reinvest back into your teams, reinvest back into your infrastructure, reinvest back into your leadership development, reinvest back into that organization, which is a necessary and important, serves a necessary and important mission if you know, for patient care and for healthcare as a whole. So that perspective allows us a lot of, I believe, freedom to operate, you know, in a quality fashion, to know that we're not heavily leveraged, to know that we're not going to be changing leadership in 2, 3, 5 years, but allowing us long-term vision, strategic perspective, as well as the creation of the teams that are going to stay in place and creating a culture that keeps those teams in place to help us to continue our growth trajectory and to help us to continue quality delivery of quality healthcare to our patients while, and I think this is important, focusing on the talent of our teams. And we talked earlier a little bit around, you know, Cranemere afforded us the opportunity during COVID, was fully supportive. Our executive teams, our senior most clinical leaders, we were universally in agreement across the board that as operating rooms were closing down specifically for COVID, that we would keep our teams fully intact. We would not lay anyone off in the clinical world or in the corporate world. We would allow PTO or paid time off where needed. And we virtually kept our entire teams from a compensation standpoint intact throughout the entire crisis of COVID. And that really demonstrates from the top down our commitment to our teams and creating a culture and creating buy-in and becoming what we call a destination employer in a workspace where supply and demand mismatch is still a significant challenge for everyone in the space. So
that's a great answer, Jim. And I think it just because. And I want to make sure the audience understands here, right? And feel free to correct me if I'm characterizing this inappropriately. You have your Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway type companies, long-term holdings, make an investment, buying distressed property or distressed assets, turning them around, et cetera, et cetera. I think most people are familiar with that from, well, now Instagram, right? They see clips of Warren Buffett.
Yeah. One thing, Joe, I might just step in just briefly on this one, in that really Cranemere's perspective is to buy, you know, is to support, if you will, more healthy companies, not to pick up. Cranemere doesn't own a slew of organizations, sure, like maybe private equity does, but, you know, they evaluate the organizations and look for the health of the company for a long term. So that allows growth and not rehab or turnaround, if you will.
Okay.
Just a little bit of a differentiator.
Yeah. And to further differentiate from what's become really popular or in the zeitgeist of culture right now, these private equity groups, right? NPR has done a lot of stories on this. They're buying up these private equity groups, if I can characterize it for the audience, have so much cash on the books, right? They're reaching into everything. But specifically in anesthesia, we see a lot of what you mentioned, Jim, that 3 to 5 year turnaround. One of those groups actually interviewed our group in Arizona, and they were very plain about, I applaud them for their honesty, but it was something like, we're going to buy up a bunch of groups with borrowed money, then we're going to spin them off and sell them to the next private equity group. And that creates a lot of instability in the market, instability for everyone involved, patients, hospitals, anesthesia providers of both types. And I think this is super interesting with Cranemere being more of a long-term holdings company that is financially supporting. I, you know, for instance, if you start off a 10-person hospital, right, that's probably a $500,000, $750,000 investment. If you have a 40 or 50-person hospital, you can do the math. It takes substantial capital to get these contracts off the ground. And that's where Cranemere is supportive, and it allows you to focus on quality with your respective audiences. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I think you came pretty much hit it. It's that initial financial support that keeps us, leveraged a very low level And that, again, builds long-term financial stability, which we haven't really talked too much about.
Right.
But that's really one of the ways that we ensure that in the long run as well.
There's
That makes a lot of – go ahead. Go ahead, Randy, please.
Chime in here. So there's an interesting counterfactual conversation going on right now in healthcare about private equity. And I don't remember much about my MBA, but there's one thing that I took away that kind of resonates in the context of this conversation, which is this idea of, you know, competitive advantage. And the thing that we're seeing here, and here's the counterfactual, which is I'm actually fairly agnostic about private equity and healthcare. I think we let the markets figure it out. Right now, the markets are indicating that the anesthesia business is a terrible business to be in if you are in private equity. Full stop. So those folks who are who have private equity support are likely feeling that discomfort. And I think the reason why is going back to my MBA comment, which is competitive advantage has completely changed in the anesthesia space in the last 3 years. So it used to be you would achieve competitive advantage as an anesthesia company by competing on price. You'd go out, you would get scale, you would negotiate against commercial insurance providers, and you would get better rates. You would duct tape those rates together and get bigger, and then you would win on price. Well, guess what? That's changed significantly, and that's largely, but not exclusively, influenced by what's going on with no surprise billing and how that's being promulgated. It has been very disruptive in the anesthesia business space. So the interesting thing about that is competitive advantage is really not found in price anymore. Competitive advantage is if you want to be successful in this space, you actually have to be able to demonstrate practice management excellence. So it's no longer a race to the bottom when in terms of focusing exclusively on price. It is, all right, so we have to run efficient operations. We have to have great leadership. We have to have a very effective recruiting engine. We have to have a great quality program. We have to have a great partnership relationship with the client. And we got to do revenue cycle really well. That requires a level of expertise that is really hard to do quickly. And you're seeing a lot of these companies who are private equity supported struggling to turn the giant battleship around and to diversify their organizational competencies to match what the market is now rewarding. And I think that's what's playing out in this equity business, the private equity business. I think it's a little disingenuous for folks to say private equity is greedy and they're making all this money when you're seeing anesthesia private equity supported firms declaring bankruptcy. Those two things actually don't make sense. So
Because maybe 2 or 3 months ago, we had a guest on the podcast, and he lit into private equity. And he's from the area from which the WBUR story came out on the broad reach of private equity, generally speaking. What I said to him was, because I generally don't disagree with our guests, I'm really trying to learn and get perspective. But what I said to him is, all these firms cannot be the same, right? In terms of like, there's different orientations, there's different values. I mean, this is as different as anything in life, right? So I think you're right, right? We're all like anesthesia firms are generally right now, they're in a vice because as compensation demand goes up, I never criticize or demean someone for making a reasonable individual economic decision. Everyone does that. That's totally normal. But it does create pressure, right? And then at the same time, as you mentioned, Randy, after the passage of the No Surprises Act, all the revenue models have changed. And now it's effectively like we all cost about the same. So who can run it? Like if we're all working with the same budget, who can run it the best, right? And it sounds like, and this has been a consistent theme throughout our conversation, you guys are making the cultural investments on how do we lead these sites effectively? right? How do we teach the clinicians? And, you know, no one needs to know the absolute crazy details of anesthesia finance, but we need to know enough about OR utilization so we can at least make reasonable decisions. And as you said, Jim, be financially responsible, both at the top level, but also on that everyday utilization level. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, let me rephrase, I don't think other groups are placing the same amount of emphasis on this as you guys are. And that's why I find you guys to be interesting and compelling people. Do you feel like, I mean, that was fairly complimentary, so I don't imagine you're going to disagree. But I think, do you feel like I've characterized it appropriately?
Yeah, you know, I think you have. One component really that we haven't dwelled upon, but that's, you know, a little bit around our structure that we use, and I think it's unique, and I'm fairly familiar with leadership structures in the industry. But we use what we call a triad structure, and I think it's critically important that, you know, we have on at every level of leadership in North Star, from mm-hmm. local sites to the regional to the divisional up to the national level. We have an ops person who's an ops specialist and expert on operations, finances, and efficiencies. But we also have at that table CRNA leadership and physician leadership. So those voices are heard because those voices bring different perspectives to the table when you're trying to run efficiently and you are trying truthfully to be the industry expert and the best in the industry around practice management, which goes back to what Randy said, what is another differentiator between North Star. But that gives us a strength that I don't believe, to my knowledge, many, if any, of the other majors really practice at these levels. There's a lot of biads, if you will, or dyads. I don't know of any triads specifically, but we get a level of expertise at every operations meeting and every facility meeting, which we also do on a regular cadence with each of these triads throughout the nation. But we get that level of expertise from three different perspectives, and it gives us more of a holistic and comprehensive perspective on how can we provide the highest level of quality. And speaking of quality, our office, of quality, and QA and QI, they're engaged and involved on a regular basis with each of those triads and universally scaling across the organization. So while we're trying to be as maximally effective from an operational standpoint, taking care of our teams and the talent that we have and that we hope to recruit and retain, we also have a loud voice on the quality side of the house on a regular mm-hmm. cadenced basis. And a large team there. And that has CRNAs, it has physicians, and some ops folks on there as well for delivery purposes. But, it allows us to hit the patient care perspective and, from all angles and with multiple levels of expertise and perspectives.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to flip to, going from this triad and doing things differently, right? Seemingly everything has changed with anesthesia in the last few years between NSA, but then you had this this whirlwind of events that has created this historic anesthesia shortage. It's like every 3 days, Becker's comes out with a story about the anesthesia shortage, citing some hospital in some city that is shutting down surgery, right? So I'm curious, how is North Star taking on the current shortages? What are you doing differently than you were, 3 or 5 years ago? And I want to tee the question up like this, because I've had these similar conversations in different areas. You know, there is a finite amount of resources within a given geographic area, right? And there's different costs associated with recruiting, right? There's the cost to recruit a new person to the market, right? So compensation plus reimbursement of some sort, right? But then there's a more aggressive cost, which is not just fair market value for some random person, a physician or CRNA coming into the market. It's hospital A really needs providers. They're all at hospital C and B, and there is a replacement costs in terms of what is it going to take to get the hospitals, the providers from hospitals B and C over to hospital A. And that can be very costly, right? Because now you're not just getting someone new with no connections, you're pulling them out of their old, potentially stable environment, right? And those dynamics are happening currently throughout the United States. So when North Star goes into these meetings, either in a new place or a current market, how do you handle those types of challenges? And again, what are you doing differently from 3 or 5 years ago to try to, you know, handle this staffing crisis that we're all going through?
So one thing I say often is that the law of supply and demand remains undefeated. So anytime there's a situation where the demand outstrips the supply, guess what? Cost goes up. And that is absolutely germane to this conversation. Where I would say, and so this is the, you know, and I said this in a room of full of 300 anesthesia clinicians or anesthesia clinical leaders recently in our big national conference, which is we are starting to see what I would characterize as early stage stabilization in staffing and across, you know, and it's variable. There's some sites that are still in trouble. Some sites are on a positive trajectory and some sites are actually 100% staffed. So it is, you know, it's not like everything's moving in a positive direction at the same time. But if you zoomed out a little bit, it looks like we're getting a foothold. We're getting traction here. I still, having said that, and being familiar with where we're at on the workforce today and what the workforce projections, which are inherently flawed, are going to look like 3, 5, and 10 years into the future, I still think it's going to be a knife fight for clinician market share in the anesthesia. Mm-hmm. So that means you have to be market competitive on compensation. You have to have a good reputation in terms of culture. You have to have effective leadership at the site level. And you have to be doing the important, the hard but important work of recruiting with both a short-term and long-term orientation. So all of that is like, yeah, that sounds like that's the right thing to do, but it's actually really difficult to do and requires, like I said, a long-term orientation. Where I think folks get themselves in trouble in this space is because compensation is the right answer. So let's all be real and transparent. The compensation sure. lever, the compensation lever works. So pull it. The problem is what we see is a lot of folks in our space, that's the only lever they pull. And so what happens is you develop a very kind of transactional team at a facility that is there because the compensation is differentiated, but the culture sucks. And so what we try to do is think about this more holistically and say, yeah, we need to be market competitive on compensation, but where we differentiate, where we attempt to differentiate is in the stuff we've been talking about, which is like, okay, hey, let's have a great relationship between the medical director and the chief CRNA. Let's have great culture. Let's move the needle on scope of practice. Let's have a great partnership with the hospital. Let's make sure that we are training SRNAs and they get good clinical and cultural experiences. That's the stuff where that's the foundation of differentiation in our space. And so if you're in the business and the only lever you're pulling is compensation, you're in a tough, tough spot. And that is not, that's not a defensible position to be in strategically.
That makes a lot of sense. Jim, what about your perspective on the physician end, what you're, or the whole company end, what you're seeing that's different from 3 years ago as far as tackling appropriate staffing?
Interesting question. You know, the dynamics have shifted a little bit on the physician side post-COVID. Historically, and I've, you know, been in the business and in the leadership roles in one shape or form or another for about a little over 20 years. But up until about 2 to 3 years ago, post-COVID, you didn't see an awful lot of mobility in physicians. They tended to stabilize, you know, find a facility where they fit in and they felt good and they didn't move. But that's changed over the course of the last couple of years. So all the factors that Randy mentioned, you know, are just as important on the physician side. Compensation is important. The and that really pretty much goes without saying, you have to be market competitive all the way across the board for all of, whether it's CRNAs, whether it's physicians, or whether it's, in your corporate offices, and if you want to draw the top talent. So the compensation component is important across the board. Culturally, these are high level professionals, and they got there because they put in the time, they put in the effort, they put in the dedication and the commitment to become the highest level professional to some degree across the healthcare space. I like to think about what I call, and it's not an original term, but it's the psychological payoff, and that kind of leans into the culture. If folks feel like they're performing a mission, and it's in alignment with their values, their personal values, and they're working well as a team, all of that really rolls into what is a healthy culture. And how do we help each other out? How do we cover for each other? Do we feel like, are we challenging each other at times? And that's, I think, one of the things that all high performing teams really do, and that's challenge each other on the level of accountability, but on also on the level of performance. So performance, so I think it's compensation and culture, psychological payoff, and overall feeling like they're, and reminding our teams and allowing them to, sometimes clinicians get so busy in the operating rooms taking care of patients that they really forget sometimes the big picture, and that's their overall, the importance of what they're doing every day. They do it in a humble fashion quite frequently, but they forget sometimes how important it is. So reminding them on a regular basis and getting their engagement, listening to them, getting, hearing their voice, just really supporting them on the psychological component as well as the financial component, I think goes a long way.
That makes a lot of sense. Guys, this has been, I really enjoy talking to the two of you. I learn when I am, whenever we talk, I'm learning something. I also enjoy the North Star folks because you seem to have a higher propensity of cowboy boots. the relative ratio of cowboy boot wearers at a conference is higher in the North Star groups than other groups. And of course, being from Arizona, I can appreciate that. Guys, any final thoughts as we wrap up?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, maybe I'll take my North Star hat off for a second and just put my CRNA clinician hat on and say that, a lot of what we've been talking about today has been problem oriented, that makes sense because a big part of our job is solving strategic problems that are really tough. I would say, though, as you look at this from the eyes of a frontline clinician, whether you're a CRNA or anesthesiologist, these folks have been through a lot of disruption in the last 3 to 4 years, with COVID, and then the workforce supply and demand imbalance obviously affects teams in a way that can be really hard and cause burnout. And so I suspect, and I think we've got some data to confirm, we're starting to experience at least some calmer sailing here in the anesthesia staffing space. And I think that's great. And don't take all of this kind of problem-oriented conversation in a way that would think that, it's not a great profession to go into. And honestly, I've got 3 daughters, and I would tell them, without hesitation, go be a CRNA or go be an anesthesiologist, because I think it's a great profession. And I think there's huge opportunity, for the foreseeable future, forever, in this space. And we should feel pretty, as clinicians, we're all clinicians, we should feel really good about that.
Thanks, Randy. Jim, any final comment as we wrap up?
First, thank you for, giving us some time to share our thoughts and to share a little bit around North Star and the anesthesia space as a whole. I agree with Randy. It's a bright future. It's a challenging future. We look for top talent, and we look for those folks that want to tackle that future and find satisfaction professionally and personally, taking care of patients, in a challenging and ever-changing environment. So, Joe, thanks for having us. Really do appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Enjoyed having you both on. Thank you all for tuning in to Anesthesia Deconstructed. I'm your host, Joe Rodriguez, alongside Mike McKinnon. Thank you to our producer, Adkins Media. If you enjoyed our conversation today, we'd truly appreciate if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Your feedback helps us bring more value to our listeners. If you have any questions, topics you'd like us to delve into, or just general feedback, don't hesitate to send us an email or direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Onward, friends, and thanks for listening.